A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this week's Set the Tape Rewind. I'm Tony Black, one of your co-hosts for a smorgasbord of an episode featuring stalwarts Owen Hughes and Steve Norman, who in our film and TV section discussed the spoils of San Diego Comic-Con this year, including everything from Shazam to the contentious Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot, while also tackling the thorny issue of James Gunn's surprise sacking from Guardians of the Galaxy 3 by Disney following yet another social media debacle. Beyond that, Matt Latham returns for another cassette tape, talking about those Now That's What I Call Music albums we all remember from our youth, before finally I return for a free play and speak to celebrated author Mark O'Connell about his joyful look at 70s and 80s blockbuster American cinema, Watching Skies. Anyway, enough of my blather. Let's get this party started, shall we?
After an episode of mixing up the running order slightly, we're back to our usual routine and starting things off with our film chat. Steve, it's been a strange old fortnight for geeks, hasn't it? We've had all the new trailers coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, which we'll get onto. But first, I think we should probably talk about James Gunn's sacking by Disney over jokes that he made on Twitter years ago and had since apologised for, which were they resurfaced when an alt-right blogger brought them to Disney's attention and they kowtowed to the demands quicker than Trump to Putin and fired the Guardians of the Galaxy director. Where do you stand on, first of all, this decision to sack him based on these tweets? What do you think about that?
They were jokes, right?
That's what he said. And he admitted they were in bad taste and he regrets
how
them.
Many, That's what how many people, I mean, he's not a comedian, but he, I suppose, does have, he is a sort of a partially a comic writer, just knowing the scripts that he's, or films that he's put out. With comedy, where is the line? Is there a line? Should there be a line? Should jokes being, you know, it's difficult. Were they all that bad? Were they really worth taking seriously? I don't know. It's difficult. I mean, it's a shame in some ways that he won't be completing the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy because he's done such a fantastic job with the first two, but in some ways is it his own stupid fault that he's not doing them? But then are you expecting people to search back through your tweets for the last 5-10 years, or shouldn't he have made the jokes in the first place?
It's a strange culture now, isn't it?
I can't imagine how sad your life must be if you're trawling back through 5 years of someone's tweets hoping to find something there. Because the guy who scrolled back through his tweets for 5 years, I guarantee he didn't think 5 years ago James Gunn tweeted some inappropriate jokes, I'm going to go and find them and use them to get him fired. He's taken issue with James Gunn, probably because he's quite anti-Trump, I'm guessing, and has just decided I'm going to scroll back through his whole Twitter timeline and look and see what I can find, and has managed to strike on exactly what he wanted to find and use it against him.
I mean, and as well as this, it's not so much that, I mean, he said those things and he regrets saying them, and it's like, okay, you know, we won't repeat them, but he shouldn't perhaps have said that. But also, this is Disney had recruited the guy who made trauma movies for a living. You know, this is the guy who wrote Romeo and Juliet and the Tromaville Cafe series. This isn't like they've gone, oh, we've just recruited the guy who wrote The Princess Diaries and, oh my God, I can't believe they said this. This is the guy who made a living from being shocking and offensive. That was the whole remit of what he did with Troma. And so to sack him for this seems, A, pretty backwards, in all honesty. It seems like they've made the wrong decision to sack him over this. I also think they've put themselves in a position here where they can't bring him back either.
No.
They can't say, all right, sorry, yeah, we acted too hastily.
But it's also sacking him for something that was said in a different time where things were perhaps more acceptable or less controversial, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
But you can't really judge stuff that's happened in the past by today's standards. Even if it was only 5 years ago, it's sometimes you can't.
You can.
You can, but sometimes you can't because, you know, things change and but I just think it's a bit over the top. He apologised for it at the time or for, you know.
I mean, I think it's different though, isn't it? I mean, it's like you can hold him accountable for what he said. I think that's not the issue. The issue is that the person who's, like you've said, who's famed these tweets has an agenda to get this guy fired from his job for something that he said and had already apologised over. You know, something that he'd regretted. And by all accounts, personal accounts, that all the people who've come out in support of him, of James Gunn, have said that, you know, he's a really nice guy, actually. And, you know, he genuinely, sincerely regretted those comments. So I think it's kind of hypocritical of them to sack him over this. But yeah, I mean, like I say, the issue as well is now, how do they go back on this? How do they admit that they're wrong without looking like the complete, you know, idiots that they've been about this decision? And I don't think there is a way. And that's quite sad, because I think it means we get less James Gunn in the Marvel Universe. I know there's people who don't really like him. They find him perhaps a bit immature or juvenile sometimes. I don't think he was as progressive, in quote marks, as perhaps some people might say other directors have been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think there's people who've taken issues to the way Peter Quill talks to the female characters in the film. I don't necessarily agree with that. But again, it just becomes another kind of stick to beat him with. But from a personal point of view, I'm getting off on a tangent slightly. I liked his movies. I liked the direction that he took his films in. And I am personally disappointed that if that truly is the end of James Gunn in the MCU, then I think that's a bad thing for Marvel and for Disney.
It's going back through something that he's already apologised for.
Yeah, and let's be honest, it's not like Disney are squeaky clean anyway, so.
No, you know, no.
Walt Disney himself, we could trawl back through comments that he's made and put them to Disney and see what they say, but I don't think they'll pay attention to it. But anyway, we also have just a little bit of time to squeeze in some chat about the Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, because other than directors being sacked and not appearing at panels, we had some trailers. I thought it'd be an opportune moment for us to talk about some of our favourite trailers from the Comic-Con. Have you got any that you particularly were keen on? Any film trailers?
Well, trying to think, the Godzilla movie. Was it Godzilla King of Monsters?
That's it.
That looked interesting. I liked the, was it the Kong Skull Island film with Tom Hiddleston?
I liked that
more than I like the Godzilla kind of reboot.
Yeah, I think people were a bit disappointed. Well, some people were disappointed with that Godzilla movie.
It was okay, but it wasn't anything fantastic. There wasn't enough Godzilla in it for a Godzilla
movie.
That
was the main issue from what I remember.
But yeah, it was okay. But it does seem like they're trying to create this this universe, as everyone seems to be doing at the moment in mm-hmm. the movie world. But that looked like it could be interesting. Shazam, I couldn't tell whether I would like it or not. Parts of the trailer I thought, yeah, okay, that looks good. Parts of it I thought, this looks awful.
You thinking of Shazam flossing?
Yeah. And yeah. I'm quite... if they do decide to work it into... because it's a DC movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if they do decide to try and work it into the same universe as Batman and Superman and the Justice League, how that would quite fit, because it seems very tonally different to everything they're doing, even though they are trying to introduce some more superhero quips and light-hearted moments into their movies rather than all being dark and broody. I can't quite see how that would link up.
Well, yeah, I do like Shazam as a character from the comics that I've read, the graphic novels, but yeah... he does have somewhat of a dark background because he was an orphan, passed around from foster care home to foster care home, and is a bit of a ruffian, shall we say. And so, like, there is that element to his background. But you're right, I don't think from that trailer I get the impression that this is the same universe as Ben Affleck as Batman.
Yeah.
You know? This doesn't look
They might keep it completely separate with just a few Easter eggs or nods to the rest in there. Or they might try and merge them all together, I don't know. But
yeah. Well, we also had two trailers, actually, for Aquaman. So I think that looks like it's almost a bridge between what Shazam is and, say, what Man of Steel was.
Yeah.
It does have some of that humour. I did find the humour, the comedy, the jokes from Justice League that involved Aquaman just a bit cringy. Mm. I think they were trying really hard to put a bromance there with Flash, and it wasn't working for me. So, going into Aquaman with slight trepidation. But I've got my fingers crossed on Shazam. But also, one other trailer that I think we probably should talk about is Glass, which is M. Night Shyamalan's third film in that series,
yes.
If you can call it a series, Unbreakable, Split, and now Glass.
Yeah.
Hmm. What do you think of it?
Well, it's an interesting concept. Split, I really liked, and didn't see the thing coming right at the end where it tied into.
No. I haven't seen it yet. So, fingers in the ears for that one.
But yeah, Split was really good and a real surprise. Unbreakable, I haven't seen for years. But it does look like it could be interesting. I mean, the trailer doesn't really reveal too much, so...
Well, okay, it's a good point for us to break off and move on to part two. Part two now, and that can only mean we're about to talk about the good old telebox. But we're not straying too far from the film section this week, as we're sticking with San Diego Comic-Con. I'm sure you'll have some stuff to say about Star Wars, The Clone Wars, returning from the grave for a seventh season, due out next year, Steve, probably. But before that, can we just talk a bit about Buffy? Because Joss Whedon's popular vampire-slaying teen, it was announced it'll get a reboot series. I mean, my first question is why? Because Buffy is still fairly relevant, isn't it? I don't think of Buffy as being old. Is it old? Is it like that old that it needs a reboot?
Everything gets a reboot, though, doesn't it? I mean, Sabrina the Teenage Witch is getting a dark and gritty reboot, isn't it?
Yeah, they're also redoing... Well, they're doing Charmed again, but I don't know if it's a reboot or if it's a sort of continuation. I don't really understand Charmed's series.
Neither do I, but it seems like any of these kind of supernatural, paranormal, witchy, vampire-y teen shows are getting a reboot at the moment. I mean, you stick a werewolf in Clueless and they'll probably remake that next week.
That's just Teen Wolf, isn't it?
Well, maybe.
But, I mean, I can... So from that point of view, okay, fair enough, I can kind of understand. I thought about it a bit more and, you know, it is the type of show you would expect to be made now, maybe by someone like Netflix, who's trying to promote strong central female characters, and Buffy could be that again. I mean, we were talking about James Gunn earlier on, and the way that there's sort of revisionism about his quote unquote progressiveness. The same thing's happening with Joss Whedon, of course. which for reasons we don't need to go into for fear of inducing the wrath of his lawyers. But there are some issues that I've seen people point out about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Some of the things that show how she has to rely on a man all the time, even though she's meant to be strong and independent. And ultimately, a lot of the time, she has to turn to men for various different reasons. There are ways around, like, if this was to be done by... I'm just saying Netflix, just because I think you see them do this more than most other networks. But if it was done by Netflix and it was due out like this year, you can just see those roles being flipped slightly. But, you know, I always thought of Buffy as I enjoyed it. I used to like Buffy. I think you can go back and watch episodes now and some bits are ropey, some bits are great. Some of the Monster of the Week episodes can be bad. Some of them can be fantastic. I just don't understand necessarily... Why Buffy? Why not just do a different show? Do you know what I mean? Am I alone in thinking that? Why not just make a different show about somebody else who's... I guess it's the IP, but at the same time, just do something new and original.
Yeah, maybe it's just the idea that will sell better than something new or original, but I don't really know where that theory would come from when you look at something like Stranger Things. All right, maybe perhaps some of the ideas in it aren't new, but it's a whole new show. It's not a spin-off, a reboot, a follow-up. It's...
I mean, it's heavily indebted.
Well, it's influenced by a lot of things, but it's not a... You know, it's not like they've rebooted a show like they are with this. And
yeah, they haven't made E.T. the TV series. No. They've just borrowed lots from E.T. and stuff like that, yeah. But also coming out of San Diego Comic-Con, we had Andrew Lincoln, the news about Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick in The Walking Dead. He's definitely leaving the show.
Yes.
In season 9. Yeah. Now, you've been following Walking Dead more closely than I have over the past few years.
For my sins. God knows why.
Yeah. Is this a good thing for the show, or is this potentially disastrous?
I don't know. I'm sorry, that's probably not a very good answer, but I have no idea if it will be a good thing or not. Because also the person who plays Maggie, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head now, she is also leaving, I believe. So it's two of the big characters leaving. Now, whether they actually get killed off or not, or they are left alive so they can come back at some point, I don't know. I can't say.
Yeah.
In the comics, which are a fair bit further ahead than what this is at the moment, both of those characters are still in it. So there's no storyline from the comics where they can take these characters out. Although Carl is still in the comics and is no longer in the show, so they've managed to find a way around that.
Because I guess the thought was that it would always be Carl who the torch is passed to. Like, that's how it's always... I stopped reading the comics as well a couple of years ago, but I always felt like the natural progression for the Walking Dead comics was Carl would become front and centre.
Yeah, I mean, the show is a bit stale. It needs a kick up the backside, whether it's removing a lot of the old guard, I suppose, which this would more or less do. I mean, if those two leave, then the only characters from early on in the show really left are Daryl, Carol, Michonne and Eugene and Rosita. So there's not many. There's only be Daryl and Carol who were originally in the opening season. In the main cast. So yeah, I mean, the trailer looked encouraging. It looked a bit more fresh and a bit different to what we've seen previously. But probably all their trailers have been like that. So who knows? I mean, they've teased heavily in the trailer, or not heavily, but they've teased in the trailer the next bad guys from the comics, which are a bit different to what we've seen before, and maybe that'll work better in a TV show. I don't know.
Okay, we also had very quickly, because we're running out of time again, but Supergirl season 4 will introduce the first transgender superhero. Dreamer is the character, by Nicole Maines. I think that's how you pronounce her name. Sorry if that's incorrect. Again, we're all about progression today on the podcast. Is this a good thing? Is this pandering? Is it actually a step forward? Is it a good thing?
It's a good thing, but whenever something like this happens, I just think, so what? Like, why are we making an issue of this? If we stop making a thing about it, it'll become more normal quicker. So, yeah, it's great that this is happening because it doesn't happen enough. These things, characters like this people like this don't get the roles and don't get characters for them enough. That's true, but the way that such a big deal is made about it in kind of news stories and everything just doesn't help seem to be make it normal, just make it accepted. Mm-hmm. If you just left it and then just the episode aired and they were in it, for me that would be better because it's just accepting it more. When will this kind of thing stop being a story? How often does it have to happen for it to be accepted as normal? Do we have to have 20 characters like this and then it stops being normal? It's just, all right, then that's a new character, that's what it is. Does that have to be 50, 100? Does that have to be happening for 10 years, 20 years, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
If everybody just stopped making a news story of it, and we're obviously guilty of doing what I'm...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Saying now because we're talking about it, but if we just stopped making a story of it, not me and you, but everybody, it becomes more normal quicker.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I do think it's worth... I mean, it's the same as, like, I would say it's similar to footballers coming out, and it should be celebrated and made into a thing because it helps to normalise it. But I see what you mean in that... It shouldn't be, but it is. It's one of those weird situations.
But it's the same thing with footballers coming out as gay. It shouldn't even they have to come out to the press as gay. It should just be like
they're
doing an interview about their private life and they happen to mention their boyfriend. It's, oh, right, okay, fair enough. Well, so what? Football's a completely different environment to the entertainment industry and everything, especially men's football. Yeah. But you know what I mean.
I think it's a step forward that it's happening. It's not going to make me go and watch the show. That's my bottom line. But why should folks be excited for a new season of Clone Wars, Steve? And you've got 60 seconds.
Right, well, the guy who seems to be in charge of all Star Wars TV, Dave Filoni, is brilliant. Star Wars Rebels was excellent four-season arc. Clone Wars, after the first season or so, was really good. Explored some interesting storylines between Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith. And yeah, basically, as their movies aren't doing so well at the moment, if they want someone to come in and run all their movies, just let that guy do it because he seems to be brilliant at it. If they want some like Kevin Feige type person for Star Wars, give it to him because he knows what he's doing.
Great. So people should be excited for a new season.
Yes, I would say so, yes.
Awesome. We'll also have articles from Ian Blackout that will be going up on the website about the new Clone Wars. That'll be on setthetape.com. So keep an eye out for that.
My name is Matthew Latham. You're listening to The Cassette Tape, and I'm going to give you a quick history lesson. There was an advertising poster for Danish bacon where a pig was listening to a chicken sing. It was back in the 1920s. Times were different back then, but at the top of the poster was a phrase, and that phrase was "Now, that's what I call music." Virgin owner Richard Branson had given that poster to his cousin Simon Draper as a gift, Draper also happened to be Virgin Records' managing director at the time. It was the name that was given to a compilation album that was released in a joint venture between Virgin and EMI. It was also the first time any major record label had collaborated on anything like it. The first one was released on the 28th of November 1983. As of the 20th of July, the 100th edition will have been released. I could go into more details on how many records this series has broken and how each compilation forms a time capsule of what the current music climate was at that time of release. But this is my section. I'm going to briefly talk about the first one I remember owning, and he's probably still my favourite one of the lot. Now 29, it's still ace. I had it on cassette, or at least my parents did, I just listened to it. It was released in November of 1994. It opens with the bombastic duet of Pato Banton and UB40 with Baby Come Back, and then we're whisked across the 90s dance pop that dominated the charts. There's Another Night by The Real McCoy, Rhythm of the Night by Corona, and the re-release of True Faith by New Order in 94. Sophie B. Hawkins' Right Beside You appears as well. Then that's when the alternative rock suddenly creeps in. The Crash Test Dummies' polarising song is on here, alongside perhaps one of the best songs ever, in my opinion, Lisa Loeb's amazing song Stay. I've always meant to try REM as well, but the song that I always remember the most that doesn't include a member of the B-42s is What's the Frequency, Kenneth, because of this compilation. And right after that, Cigarettes and Alcohol by Oasis, and we're still on the end of Type 1. Type 2 starts with its really big current hits of the time, E17, Shakedemus and Pliers, R. Kelly, and then we come to the filler songs. But the filler songs on this compilation, there's still amazing choices on it. Confide in Me is a brilliant Kylie Minogue track that I could spend a whole episode of this talking about. Park Life by Blur, and There's Even Trouble by Shampoo, a pop act with a song so annoyingly catchy, but still arguably ahead of its time for reasons I don't have time here to divulge. I think a lot of people have their own Nair compilation they remember listening to. It perhaps has lost a lot of its dominating force due to the rise of streaming, but it's still an interesting series to dip into in terms of the aforementioned time capsule elements of it. So until the next 100 releases in another 35 years' time, this is what I call an episode of the cassette tape, available from all good stores.
Okay, welcome to our free play section this week, where I'm talking to a guest, special guest we have on today, Mark O'Connell, the author of Watching Skies, Star Wars, Spielberg and Us, which is a brand new book all about Mark's love of 1980s Americana, really, and 1970s, 1980s Americana. So thanks for coming on the show, Mark, for a little chat about your brand new book.
No, hello. Hello, everyone. Hello, fellow tape heads. Are we allowed to say that? I think we might, yes.
We can go with that. It's a new thing you've coined there.
Yeah, I hope it's not some dodgy thing that we'll find out. But yeah, we'll go with tape heads for today, yeah.
Tapeheads, yeah, I like it. It's a great book. I mean, you obviously came to some level of prominence with your first book, Catching Bullets, which is all about James Bond and your grandfather's wonderful story of your grandfather's history with the Bond series.
That's right.
Such a wonderful book. Loved it. Thank you. Bond fan. And this is not a sequel in terms of it carrying on that story, but in a way, it sort of thematically seems to be sort of connected.
Yes. Yeah. For a long time, I resisted doing anything in that same vein and same mould. And then a publisher, we were sort of chatting, and he sort of loved Catching Bullets and the Bond stuff I do. And we sort of loosely said, is there a Star Wars book here? And I went, yes, because that was always in my head as the second book. And then the issue was, I don't want to cross too many streams of my timeline with Bond and my timeline with Star Wars. They obviously have crossovers. But when I thought about it and looked at it, I thought, actually, my Star Wars Spielberg sort of the genesis of finding those movies was actually just before my Bond timeline. So it's a sort of prequel sequel. Like, I call it a Star Wars prequel, and then what can go wrong? So yeah, that's where I sort of where it comes from. But it's a sort of, yeah, it's very much the next chapter. But whereas perhaps Catching Bullets was my memoir of being a franchise fan and a Bond fan, this is perhaps it's a nod to all our childhoods, all our remembrances, whether we've forgotten things or not.
Yeah, definitely, because it spans sort of around, I'd say roughly about an seven, eight year sort of span, doesn't it? It sort of covers between sort of Jaws and E.T.
Officially, it's sort of 75 to 84, But then I do look at the sort of what happened to Star Wars and Superman, particularly what happened after 84, because obviously lots of things have happened since. And also, whereas the film, Jaws is the one that sort of launches the book, in the timeline at least, there's obviously lots of films that fed into Jaws, American Graffiti, Bonnie and Clyde, Rosemary's Baby, The Godfather. So, yeah, so 75 to 84 is the window, but it's sort of flanked by curtains on either side a bit that sort of open it out even more.
Yeah, it's that real span, isn't it? That span of cinema where what we know to be the blockbuster, or the beginnings of the blockbuster, you know, in American culture, which then spread to the UK, you know, and then you know, I grew up in the 80s, you know, I was a child of the 80s, so I caught that as a young child going into the 90s, you know, with all the big action movie blockbusters and that kind of thing. But it all sort of began really with Spielberg and Lucas and that transformation that they started and created, really, didn't it?
Yeah, they changed. I mean, I've been saying it so much recently, but they did change cinema so much, and almost just those two guys, Lucas and Spielberg. Yes, other people and other factors were dramatically important too, but with Jaws particularly, Spielberg changed the commerce of the movies, because suddenly the films could come out in the summer, and that was often a bit of a dry, barren time in American cinemas, at least. And then Jaws came out and, you know, ruled the waves for months and months and months in America. So it's sort of looking at that, and then that's why perhaps one could argue that Star Wars a couple of years later was became a summer hit, because Jaws slightly, you know, almost literally set out the deck chairs and said, you know, this vacation has started, let's do it.
And that's it. It really feels like it's a book that sort of spans, you know, this period. But the key to it, really, and I think why it has those, as I mentioned, sort of similarities to Catching Bullets, in that it's very personal. You know, it comes at it. Now, it's not a, you know, a book of the history of this cinema in that sense. It's more
it's not a book of stats and facts. You know,
no.
I make a joke that this is not going to proudly tell you that Tom Selleck was nearly Indiana Jones, or that, you know, we know that. This is not about trivia. This is about our trivia through those films.
Mm, definitely. And it's your journey, really. Your journey as a young boy growing up and going through, you know, and then as an adult, you know, going and visiting some of these places and going on the road trip, you know, in America and things like that. And having that experience as an adult and a child. I mean, I think that's the key to the book, isn't it? That's why it's so, you know, it comes at it from a new angle, in that people can really have that, you know, nostalgic feeling.
Yes, yeah, because these films haven't ended. You know, even if we never had another Star Wars film after 83, or a Blade Runner, or an Indiana Jones, those films, I think, would still have as much importance and weight to them, weight of history and weight of cinematic history. But they have carried on. We, you know, one of the chapters in the book, I write a letter to my sort of 8-year-old 1984 self, going, there are going to be more Star Wars films. There's going to be another spoiler, everyone who didn't see Force Awakens. There's going to be, you know, Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher are going to come back, and there's going to be more Star Wars films, and Indiana Jones and Rocky and Blade Runner. And basically a lot of those franchises that you assumed had their day in the 80s haven't. They're still here. So what I try and do in the book is go, why are they still here? And it's not nostalgia and looking over our shoulders at our past isn't enough. It's why did those films initially do so much and revolutionize so much? And yeah, Close Encounters changed how films sounded, you know, what we heard through Dolby and all of that. Jaws, as I say, changed the scheduling and the idea of summer blockbusters, and also the idea of youth cinema. Spielberg and Lucas brought kids back to the cinema again. So that's what that was. And then when E.T. becomes the most pirated movie of all time in 82, to me, that's important, because it means it was the most watched film at home for many a decade. So it's sort of bringing in all of that and looking at each film. What did that film do that still has relevance today?
Yeah, and it does that really well, because it allows you to sort of draw those, you know, connecting lines. And because, you know, in some ways, I think we're going through almost a resurgence of that kind of cinema in some ways. You know, you've got people like The Rock, you know, being this hilarious sort of old school 80s kind of, you know, action hero now. You've got things like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which are just these massive blockbuster events that children just, you know, I mean, my best friend's got like a 10-year-old boy, and he's just enraptured with the Avengers and all that kind of thing, in the way that you would have been and I would have been when Star Wars was out and Indiana Jones and all these kind of things. So it feels like it's the right time to look back in this, isn't it?
There are very few films that become events. I mean, even some of them, I'm not a massive Marvel fan initially. I actually think the most recent wave of their films has been the most successful. And they are events. And if they're an event for a 10, you know, little kid age 10, then that's great, because they need those cinematic events. You know, to me, the last big movie event was possibly Phantom Menace or Jurassic Park. I'm sure there are others. So it's, it was the sort of watching Skies, just trying to look at those moments of history. I mean, the people that weren't around, E.T. was like talked about as much as Trump, you know, would be today, or social media, or fake news. You know, one film was to became sort of the parlance of sort of popular culture across the globe. So I'm trying to sort of slightly remind of that, but without doing that. I'm not an old man sitting on my rocking chair shouting at DVDs going past, or Blu-rays, or digital downloads. You know, I'm not going to do that, because I think evolution happens for all the right reasons.
No, and it's a very joyful book. You know, it's looking back with that, you know, without rose-tinted glasses, looking back, you know, and capturing that sense of wonder, you know, that you had when you were a child. And that's why it's so lovely to read. You know, I think it's one of those books as well. You don't have to have grown up in that era. You know, I didn't grow up with the... I wasn't around when Star Wars, any of the Star Wars came out, kind of. I mean, 83, I was one. So, I wasn't around at that point. I wasn't there for E.T. I was just being born. And funnily enough, I was having a conversation about what point in time would you go back as a movie fan and revisit? And I chose 1982, because I wanted to see The Wrath of Khan without knowing Spock dies.
Hang on, whoa, Spock dies.
I'm sorry. This is a Sixth Sense moment all over again,
of
isn't
all
it?
The Bruce Willis. To go really slowly through my Star Trek movie canon box set. No. Do you know what? You're not the first person to say 82. Other people I've chatted with, we've sort of said, what is the year? And everyone's knee jerked and said 82. I was alive in 82. I do remember seeing E.T. And that sort of is my only remembrance of that year going to the movies. I missed, you know, The Thing and Wrath of Khan, Blade Runner, and Tron, and all of those movies. But yeah, that is a good year to go back to as well, because it's one thing I was trying to underline, because I haven't written the book for just, you know, people in their early 40s who still look young and effervescent like myself. It has been also written for people that weren't in that era, because I wanted it to be universal for all Sky kids. And one of the things I try and just underline is we didn't have YouTube. If we saw a film trailer, we had to hopefully catch it at the cinema before some Disney holiday half-term release. We would often see a film poster in the lobby of a movie theater. We would not see, you know, it shared online like Aquaman has in the last couple of days, or, you know, all the other films coming out of Comic-Con. So it was a bizarre time, and we never had all those in the 80s. We never had Netflix and memes and GIFs and all those platforms. And again, I'm not berating that or you know, being old man about it, but it's ironic that this sort of 80s-ness is being, this fascination in 80s is being held up by all this software and technology that wasn't around at the time. I think that's quite curious. So that's sort of also what the book tries to remember as well.
Yeah, because I think if we had that technology back then, it would have been, you know, the reactions would have been very much the same. You know, you would have had the good and the bad, you know, because it's not all bad on social media. That's the other thing. You know, people always accentuate, they always see the horrible flame wars going on, all the horrible Star Wars fandom and things like that. But there's a lot of good stuff. You know, there's a lot of people really just loving these things and getting enjoyment out of them. And I think it would have been definitely the same back then. So, yeah, the book captures that and reminds you of that, definitely.
Yeah, hopefully.
No, it really does. It really does. But yeah, it's available from the History Press, but you can get it on Amazon.
Yes, it's all the usual places, Amazon, Waterstones, Smiths, and it's been published in the US as well for US readers at the beginning of September. So it's going to fly the Atlantic as well.
Perfect. It surely will do really well over there. I mean, given that a lot of it is, the majority is about American movies and that kind of cinema, so you'd hope. You know, are they flying you out there, Mark, to do some...
No, I'm going to thumb a lift like some 70s Spielberg single mum and hope that I'll get picked up by a bearded kind guy that will drive across. No, not yet, but I'm often in America, and that obviously the book reflects that. It's sort of San Francisco as a second home, so we shall see.
Perfect. So what's next? I mean, have you got any further books in the pipeline, sort of tapping into this kind of area? Or
I've got a couple of ideas to sort of keep this project going, but the next thing I'm working on is something. It's going to be the third part of this cinema trilogy, but the third part will be something completely different, and not what I think most people will expect, but hopefully what a few people might like.
I am super curious. Very, very
you won't,
curious.
No one will guess it either. No one will guess it. So just watch this space.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. Well, go out, guys, and buy Watching Skies. It's a great book. It really will. And like we said, you know, you don't have to have lived it. You don't have to have been there at the time. You know, you can pick this up even as a young person and really get into the mindset of being that age and, you know, at that time. You know, really, it's a great book talking about some of the best movies in cinema that have ever been made. So check it out.
Thank you.
But thanks a lot, Mark, for coming on and joining
us.
No
worries. No, it's been good to chat. I like chatting with people that know their movies and their eras, so it's been good to chat. Thank you.
Cheers. You're officially now a tapehead, so you know.
Yeah. Team tapehead. I'm hashtagging that now. Okay.
Turn off the projector and bring up the house lights as we're done for another edition of Set the Tape Rewind. Remember to check out our site, www.setthetape.com, for news, articles, reviews, and more every day. And follow us on Facebook at Set the Tape and Twitter at Set the Tape. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.